Likutei Sichos Chelek Yud Zayin Chag HaPesach Sicha Aleph. Ultimately, the purpose of our leaving Mitzrayim was so that we would receive the Torah at Sinai. In this Sicha, the Rebbe discusses how we got to Har Sinai from Mitzrayim, how this happened via the journey of the three names of the festival of Pesach. Pesach is referred to by three descriptive names. The one referenced in Torah is Chag HaMatzes, the festival of Matzes. The second we reference in our prayer liturgy, established by the sages as Zman HaChiruseinu, the time of our liberation, and this name is added to Chag HaMatzes. And the third is the common name by which we all refer to Pesach, Chag HaPesach, the festival of Pesach. This tells us that the Yom Tov has a general and essential point that inculcates three ideas that are expressed via these three names. We know that a particular order in Torah is also Torah, and thus contains a lesson, and the order in which these three names are brought are also relevant to the context and the lesson inherent in each name. The name Chag HaMatzes, the Torah's name for the Yom Tov, followed by the name that the Sanhedrin gave the Yom Tov, Zman HaChiruseinu, as it's reflected in our prayer, the time of our liberation, and thereafter Chag HaPesach, the name that the sages formalized and what we call the Yom Tov. Yechezkel prophesizes the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the time of our leaving Egypt, as the time of the birth of our people. Our nation's birth doesn't only reference the fact that this is when we became a free people, but it goes deeper than that. We evolved with this experience into a completely new entity. Leaving Egypt was ultimately about receiving the Torah at Sinai. Hence, Shavuos is considered a continuum of leaving Egypt, connected by the 7 weeks of counting the Omer between the two events. In other words, the birth of our nation is directly connected to our becoming a Torah nation. Our purpose for existence is Torah. And the birth of a nation, hence a new entity, isn't as a result of our leaving the lowliness and depravity of Egypt behind, where we were no vessel for the holiness of Torah, but rather it's about the quality of Torah itself, which is, as Shlomo HaMelech says in Proverbs, Eyesh Hashuim Yom Yom, a daily source of delight for God, and a chemda gnuza, a hidden treasure, as the Malachi Hashareis, the ministering angels, referred to Torah when Moshe came up onto the mountain to receive the Torah, and they challenged God about giving the Torah to us. As we learn in Maseches Shabbos, challenging our right to Torah, here below in particular, particularly coming as we were from Egypt, as Torah was a completely new entity for Bnei Yisrael. It's via the three names, Pesach of Pesach, Chag HaMatzes, Zman HaChiruseinu, and Chag HaPesach, that this change, this shift, and via the order of these three names, that the shift takes place and that we're able to become a new entity, capable and worthy of receiving the Torah. An analogy of a teacher and a student best illustrates the process and the stages of this transformation and this shift. A teacher teaches his student a new idea that the student cannot acquire on his own based on his current intellect or knowledge or even ability. In order for the student to take in the new information, there must be a process of first humility on the part of the student, recognition that the student sits before the vastness of his teacher, whose knowledge transcends his own, and he sits before his teacher as an empty vessel. The second stage for the student is the energetic intellectual buy-in of the student, who is determined to take in completely and willingly to become a vessel for the concepts and ideas that he is being taught. Ultimately, the desired goal is that the student grasps the subject with equal depth to his teacher. But as things stand at the outset, that is far from the case, and thus the teacher must condense his own vast knowledge and make the lesson suitable to the limitations of the student. In doing so, the teacher, in fact, conceals the depths of his knowledge, and the student must simultaneously lift him or herself beyond his or her limitations, beyond the limitations of their intellect. This pattern of the student experiencing humility to be followed by experiencing himself as a vessel seems unusual in the light of the Gemara in the Tractate of Shabbos, which tells us that Rabba would speak a riddle for his students to open their hearts to learning, to make them into vessels. This seems contradictory to what we are suggesting here, that bittul, self-nullification, humility must come before seeing oneself as a vessel. The opening that Rabba created for his students, says the Rebbe, was only a preparation for learning, but it wasn't the learning itself. The riddle is only about creating a space for learning in one's intellect. The student-teacher connection, however, giving over intellect and bonding with the intellect of the student, transpires when the learning begins. Accordingly, we can understand the pattern of smol doicha and yamin mekarevis, that while the left hand distances, the right draws near. The weaker hand, the left hand, pushes away, and the stronger dominant right hand draws the student close, which would perhaps evoke a similar question. Why isn't it about drawing near first, as the riddle draws near and opens the heart of the student before the student experiences awe for his teacher? In fact, don't we do everything with the right hand first? The question is actually compounded by the fact that immediately following this statement, the Talmud teaches that regarding one's evil inclination, regarding a child and regarding a woman, again, the left should distance and the right draw close. The way to draw a child into learning is, as the Alter Rebbe says, as appropriate to his age, and withdrawing him in with a reward of treats. It seems that beginning with the left distancing the child, trying to create fear, or humbling the child first, will not end with a positive result. Understanding this requires that we realize what we're addressing is not the preparation for the enticing of the student's mind, but rather the actual bonding and study of teacher and student. And each of these three levels of this bond, the bittul of the student's experience of self as a vessel, and the student's desire to transcend his limitations and become a vessel and a new entity, in fact, for his learning, is expressed in the process defined in the three names of Pesach. The names of Matzah, which expresses Bittul Chag HaMatzis, the process of Ta'avdun, a subservience to God which nullifies the previous subservience to Egypt. This step requires the effort of the Jew, who will, through this effort, come to the possibility and the strength of Na'aseh v'Nishma. Zman Cheruseinu is not a subservience that crushes the Jew. Rather, the effort is in order to redeem the actual Metzias, the reality of a Jew, much like fish, who cannot be separated from the water that surrounds them. A Jew's essential reality is that he can't be separated from Torah. Ein locha ben chayrin ela misha esek b'talmud Torah. True freedom exists for the one who is engaged in the study of Torah. Freedom, thus, for a Jew coming out of the slavery of Egypt, whatever one's Egypt may look like, it may even look like a freedom for the individual, if he is unattached to Torah mitzvahs, and thinks that life is easier that way, is to be redeemed to the purpose of his existence. A Jew is created to serve the Eibishter, to live within Torah. Through the process of these first two steps, an immeasurable change takes place for our nation, where the experience of subservience shifts into the unlimited bond of a Jew and his Creator. And we arrive at the immeasurable and incomparable leap of Pesach, the leap into a transcendent phase far higher and beyond our former limitations. One of the lessons in the divine service for every Jew from this process is, as the Alter Rebbe teaches in Tanya, accepting with awe of God and fear of God the service of a Jew to God as his master, not through sadness, God forbid, but rather through the joy in knowing that v'amech kulam tzaddikim, we are all righteous in essence. And if one has separated oneself from God, then the work of bringing down that separation must begin. And this is indeed accomplished with a broken heart and a bitterness in one's soul. But holiness negates the idea of breaking. Only when one has to confront one's body and animal soul because they have taken control, then the Aveda is with a broken and humbled spirit. But even as this work takes place, the godly soul experiences service only through joy. When the story related regarding the Alter Rebbe's snuff box, which the Alter Rebbe had unhinged in order to use the upper part as a mirror to center his tefillin, reached the ears of the Tzemach Tzedek, it was told as if the Alter Rebbe had broken off the upper part of the snuff box. The Tzemach Tzedek corrected this, saying that surely there was a pin that held the two parts together, for the Alter Rebbe's approach was not to break things. We might ask, but if the Alter Rebbe had broken the lid, it would have been for the purpose of a mitzvah, not for the act of breaking it. And the answer to this would be that the realm of holiness has no connection at all to the act of destruction. Hence, the Alter Rebbe, Tzemach Tzedek, was sure that the Alter Rebbe would not have broken the lid. And so concludes the Rebbe, the Aveda must begin with humility and the ability and desire to accept the work required. And the work must be done with a godly soul whose service is always with joy and energy, with the awareness that this vitality expresses what it means to be free, expresses the essence and true identity of a Jew.